Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com. Join Josh and Chuck, the guys who bring you Stuff You Should Know, as they take a trip around the world to help you get smarter in a topsy-turvy economy. Check out the all-new Super Stuffed Guide to the Economy from HowStuffWorks.com, available now exclusively on iTunes.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. As usual, I'm Ben. Scott, you want to say hello to everyone?
Hello, everyone.
And that's Scott, our auto editor. I'm pretty excited about the weekend coming up.
Why is that?
I'm glad you asked. I'm actually going on a little bit of a vacation up to the mountains in Anoda, Georgia.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see.
What kind of a trip is it? I mean, a road trip? What are you talking about?
More of a maxing and relaxing out by the river. Might go fishing. You know, might, I imagine, see some animals.
Boy, was it like a camping trip?
Sort of a camping trip. So there shouldn't be anything too wild going on. Certainly not anything wild enough to land me in a police car. But just in case, one thing leads to another. As you know, things can lead. Mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe today we could talk a little bit about police cars.
I would love to talk about police cars. I like police cars. They're really cool. So I think it's a great topic for us.
I think that they're very, very fascinating. So I guess we should just start at the beginning, right? What exactly is a police car? What do we mean when we say it?
Oh, well, okay, that's probably the easiest question we'll have all day, I'm sure. But what is a police car? It's a law enforcement vehicle, something that police use to get here and there. Used to be in the past that police would walk the beat. You know, they would just simply get around by foot, and often in pairs, so that it was safe. Then they kind of progressed, and maybe at the same time, I guess, they would patrol on horseback. Mm-hmm. And that still happens occasionally. And even walking police still happens, in downtown city environments. But yeah, they would, ride on horseback, walk. Then they kind of had to make this progression because here's what happened. The criminals began to get vehicles so that they could get away quicker from the scene of a crime.
Oh.
Let's say bank heist, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Funny as this sounds, there was a time when criminals had vehicles and police sometimes did not.
Really?
And yeah, sure. So, I'm sure that it happened somewhere in some small town that, there were police officers that were left standing when, the criminals were getting away. There's nothing they could do to stop them. In order just to keep up with the criminals, the criminal element, and also to be able to patrol a larger area and also, just for, I guess, being able to get a lot of different police officers on a scene at one time, rather than everybody walking, everybody riding a horse, made sense to move to a vehicle, and police car is it.
And what a move it's become, am I right? Because there's so many different types of vehicles for different types of law enforcement objectives.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there are hundreds of different types of vehicles, really, that are being used for police vehicles. Now, specifically, there are sports cars, there are sedans, there are SUVs for certain areas. There are also a few vehicles that are, intended for off-road use only, maybe in mountainous regions or trail situations, park ranger type thing.
Right, right.
But yeah, there's just unbelievable variety. I mean, I've seen Mustangs, I've seen Ford Crown Victorias, I've seen Impalas, Dodge Chargers, you name it, there's a vehicle out there in service as a police vehicle.
And those vans as well. I know, I don't think we should go into the vans.
The vans, yeah.
The what do they call them? Paddy wagons?
Paddy wagons.
Yeah.
And you know what? Interesting thing about a paddy wagon is that perhaps, I mean, this is kind of up for debate, I guess, but they think that the first motorized police vehicle was a paddy wagon back in like the early, maybe 1909, I think is the number I saw.
Wow.
And yeah, there's a possibility that that's the very first one. Now, there was a police vehicle even prior to that in the late 1800s that was an electric vehicle. So there's a good chance that the first police vehicle or law enforcement vehicle was electric.
I did not see that one coming.
Yeah. Yeah,
huh.
Shocker. Okay. I didn't think of that until I just said it.
For
but, yeah.
our listeners out there, Scott has a pretty excellent face when he's going for sarcasm.
No, I really wasn't. I wasn't. Hey, you know what? Before we go much further, I want to say that this idea for this podcast, this police car podcast, sort of in a way came from a listener. We have somebody that wrote into us. His name is Ben. He's from New Zealand. And we've been going back and forth in email a little bit. And one of the ideas that he posed was about police cars from around the world. And we just mentioned that a little bit, but I've said this in an email to him already, but you know, that gets into hundreds, if not thousands, of different vehicles when you're talking about around the world.
Sure.
And that's probably something better to kind of look up and just, you know, determine what type of vehicles are used in what different regions, or in different regions. So this is kind of a spinoff from that. So we're going on a suggestion from Ben here to you know, just talk about police cars here in the U.S. and what makes them unique.
All the way in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Thanks for writing in, Ben.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird. We've got Ben the listener and then Scott Benjamin, the editor. Mm-hmm. And then my name's Ben as well.
Crazy.
Yeah, we are saved up on the Bens.
Right.
But yes, I guess we should have mentioned that earlier. I'm sorry, I forgot on that.
Oh, that's all right. I have it as a note here, and I just just got to it. So, we figured we'd give him his props.
So we can't, his props indeed. Yeah. So we can't quite take you all the way around the world in this episode, Ben, but we can definitely tell you about the stuff in the United States, and I'll learn along with you. So when I hear... when I hear the names that you're mentioning of the different makes and models of police vehicles, those are obviously also civilian vehicles.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, for the most part, they are civilian vehicles. They're cars that are made in the factory, really. That's kind of this. There's another angle to this that we'll talk about right now, I guess. Police cars are made at the factory, but only to a certain point. They're manufactured as a police vehicle or a service vehicle. And I think they call it a taxi cab as well. There's a police taxi cab package that you can get, and they're similar because at the factory, mm-hmm. they will include. Now these cars are in heavy service. I mean, use all the time, and we'll talk about that in a moment too. But you know, they're built with heavy duty components, high performance components for the police vehicles mm-hmm. That maybe the taxi cabs don't have. But the heavy duty aspect of them is really important for the police because they have to put up with a lot of punishment. They're definitely rough use.
Now I've got a really specific one I heard. Mm-hmm. I've heard before, and tell me if this is true, that there is a difference in the electrical system or the computerized system of a police car versus the civilian version of that car that allows it to go faster.
That's true in some cases. Not every case, but that's true. You can program the engine control module, the ECM, or ECU in some vehicles, it's a fuel delivery system, really. And that's how they map out how much fuel the vehicle gets, how much air the vehicle takes in. And by tuning that to the point where it boosts horsepower, boosts torque, et cetera, in the vehicle, the police vehicle definitely has more power than a civilian version of that vehicle would. Not in every case, but mm-hmm. if you have one of these cars that's programmed for police use specifically, obviously that's something that, you know, the factory notes ahead of time, you know, that this vehicle is designated for police use. It's not a car that's to get into the hands of the public.
Or a 16-year-old who just got their license.
Yeah, the good point. Yeah, that would be a little scary. It's really not that much more. It's not like double the horsepower or anything, uh-huh. but it's a significant increase to the point where it matters.
It's an edge.
It is.
So what else makes a police car unique?
Well, there's actually a list, a long list.
And, oh, man, you know I love a list.
Well, I won't bore you with the list, but like I said, what this really comes down to is high performance and heavy duty components. And one thing that we should say before we even get into this list is that you have to remember that a lot of police cars, and maybe you haven't even thought of this, but a lot of police cars are in 24-hour use.
They're
continuous use. You know, after the end of one shift, they're handed off, still running, to the next officer that takes over. So occasionally you'll get a vehicle that will remain in continuous use without ever even turning off. You know, they may shut them down here and there, but for the most part, it's 24 hours of use. And they can go as far as, and I didn't know this is a crazy number, they can sometimes put as much as 90 to 100,000 miles on a vehicle per year.
That's quite a bit.
That is. I mean, but if you're talking 24 hours of use, continuous, around the clock, you know, 365 days a year.
Sure.
That's a lot of mileage. And, I mean, you or I, it'd be a lot if we drove 30,000 miles or 35,000 miles.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot. That's a lot of road trips, you know,
yeah.
long distance driving. But imagine putting, you know, three times that amount on a car. That's significant.
And additionally, depending, I guess, on what type of law enforcement we're talking about, that could be a lot of stop and start driving, you know, in the city at the red lights.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Now, it probably would have lower mileage if it was in a city environment, but still, you've got that engine running for 24 hours, or close to it, anyways. And because of that, some of these vehicles, you know, for service reasons, they're well maintained, mm-hmm. for the most part. They're well maintained. They've got their own service department. They have engine idle time counters, which monitor the number of hours that the engine's running. And I see that in heavy duty trucks a lot, construction trucks, diesel trucks, but the police vehicle versions often have engine idle time hour counts, so that, you know, the mileage might not be so accurate. I mean, it's accurate, but it might not really tell you the whole story that, yeah, the car sat idling for 15 hours out of that 24 hours because, you know, the officer's, you know, at a speed trap or just idling watching, sure. a certain intersection or, you know, whatever the case may be, or at a crime scene or at a traffic accident. Mm-hmm. You know, it may remain in idle for 4 or 5 hours at a time. That's an extreme case, but it may happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of wear and tear on the engine as well. And the mechanics there need to know, you know, how long that car's been operating.
I guess, yeah. I guess that's I didn't think about that, but that's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much everything has to be able to function as though it is going to conceivably run for 48 hours or something nonstop.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's again, heavy duty. And another thing that comes into this is a lot of cooling systems. So let's say that if they run hot, they don't want it to run hot for a long, long time. So
right.
there are external coolers for the oil, you know, engine oil, transmission oil, power steering fluid. There's also just an overall general cooling system. You know, if the radiator, the system that keeps the engine cool. It's heavy duty, super duty, I guess, really.
So is that on the list?
That's part of the list, yeah. And again, some more standard equipment. There's a list of standard equipment. There's optional equipment. The list I happen to be looking at is for Dodge Charger. Allpar, I think, had this list, and it's actually a pretty good list. So we talked about a few different things. You know, high output alternator, mm-hmm. battery. They often have a column shifter, which is something that's kind of a throwback from, you know, long time ago.
Yeah, is that what I think it is?
I'm sure it probably is. Yeah, you don't have to reach down to the center console to shift. Part of the reason is because, it's just more convenient when you're driving, mm-hmm. in the way that they drive, because they're trained to drive like high-performance drivers, really. I mean, if you've
right.
ever seen a state trooper proving ground or a test facility, you wouldn't believe what these guys can do with the car. They're very talented. Not just state troopers, but, you know, sheriffs and local mm-hmm. police, I think, go through training like this as well. And some of those maneuvers require you to be able to shift between gears quickly and to reach that far away from the wheel down to the center console and shift and get it right is often difficult. And, you know, it's quickness as well. So they can get out of the vehicle real quick, you know, hand mm-hmm. off the wheel, shift it into park and get out. It serves a function. Everything serves a function.
And we should also point out, I think, at this point, that due to the customization that any given law enforcement agency might have on their vehicles, on their department's vehicles, there's no definite, what's the best way to say it? There's no definite specification or universal arrangement for every law enforcement.
Correct. Company. Yeah, that's so. Right. You know, when I said that they come from the factory built that way to a point, I mean just to that point. They've got a police package. And the police package vehicle is then shipped to the law enforcement agency, where an upfitter, someone who fits the specific equipment that company is looking for, that law enforcement agency is looking for,
mm-hmm.
they fit that equipment to that vehicle. So it may vary from county to county, it may vary from city to city, it may vary from state to state. I don't know how that, you know, breaks down. I'm sure it's, you know, just as many varieties as there are agencies. So yeah, it's only to a point, and then every car after that, you know, from that point is, for the most part, unique.
So pretty much every cop car is a custom ride.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, huh. It really is. I mean, they're very well crafted and very well thought out at this point. There's some really, really, interesting features to these police cars. So,
tell me the crazy stuff.
Some crazy stuff. I'll look for some. Most, you know, a lot of it comes down to the engine as well. So a lot of these Charger cars, the Hemi package, you know, the Hemi engine,
yeah.
that's big deal for them, you know, that they have the added power that they need. There's a stealth mode switch in a lot of cars.
what is a stealth mode switch?
That's pretty cool. I knew you were going to be intrigued by that one. What that does is it turns off the instrument cluster, radio indicators, and the park neutral drive indicator.
Yeah.
So it really, and it takes everything down to the dimmest possible level, so they can drive without lights, without interior lights as well. And I'm not sure about this, Ben. I'm pretty sure that if they open the door, none of that comes on as well if you're in the stealth mode.
Man, we should get stealth mode switches, and then we should also see what we can do to our computers, our car computers. I actually, you know what? We should check if that's legal first.
I imagine. I'm pretty sure it's not.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty sure. Okay. But and I think that's one of those. I think that's one of those things that when a vehicle's decommissioned, they have to undo a lot of this stuff.
Oh yeah,
and that's another cost for the police agency, I guess, or the law enforcement agency, is that they have to remove certain things from the cars in order to put them back in the hands of the public. Because I see a lot of police cars driving around or old police vehicles.
Yes,
easy to spot them with the spotlight on the sides.
Right,
and they just look like police vehicles. Yeah, it seems like there's a high cost involved, I would think, with decommissioning a vehicle as well.
Okay.
Let's see. Another thing that they have, we've talked about this before, but vinyl seats. They have
vinyl seats.
They have that partition that goes in between the passenger, passengers in the rear and the driver. That's important as well. A cage, sometimes glass or both.
Uh-huh.
I think there's also a metal barrier that they put in the back of the seat in order to prevent objects from being able to be pushed through the seat.
Right.
Safety
yes.
concern as well. If a knife or something like that were to go through there. That would be bad news for sure for the driver or passenger.
Also, the back door, you can't open it from inside.
Yeah,
right?
You're reading my mind, Ben.
Sorry.
That's good. I'm glad. It's you're thinking about this stuff. That's excellent. It's the rear door locks and handles are inactive. Hmm. The driver can only they have to be open from the outside. Hmm. Let's see. Trying to think of anything else. Dual spot lamps. On the sides we talked about that.
Yeah, those are neat.
And you can get those in chrome or you can get those in flat black, which is, kind of cool so that, they're not reflective.
Yeah.
A lot of that is, kind of the stealthy type stuff as well. Mm-hmm. Another cool thing that they have is a red dome light. A lot of them have red dome lights. You can either switch to a white light or a red light or, of course, no light at all.
Oh, okay.
You know why?
No. But I understand what you're saying, but I don't know why.
I thought you were going to say you knew why. Yeah, the red dome. The purpose behind a red dome light is it allows the officer to still be able to see in the vehicle, but it preserves night vision.
Oh, okay, cool.
So part of that stealth mode thing where they've got the lights dim as possible, you want to be able to see. Here's a good example. You ever been on a bus at night?
Yes.
Okay, you know how bright it is inside a bus because they leave all the lights on and it's dark outside? You can't see anything outside.
That's a good point.
Can't see one thing. So they keep it dim, dark inside. And not only that, if it's dim and dark inside, you can see outside better. If they are suddenly, for whatever reason, if they're chasing somebody, they have to get out of the car quickly and find that person. And, they've got the person has the advantage of already having been in the dark.
Yeah.
Darkness. Their night vision isn't totally screwed up by having a bright white light in their eyes for the 30 seconds or 1 minute prior. So it gives them this advantage when they hop out of the car.
Crazy tangent, unrelated, but interesting. Someone had told me recently that the reason pirates would wear eye patches, or sailors at that time, was to preserve night vision in one eye so that they went below deck. They would be able to switch the patch.
No kidding.
You know what? I have no idea if it's true. It was just somebody, just somebody having a casual conversation, and maybe somebody can look into it. I mean, that's
interesting theory. I always thought it was because they had that one hook hand.
Yeah.
and they had an itch on their eye or something.
Yeah.
I'm here with you. Yeah, I know. There's a joke in there somewhere. I'm sure. But Now, we've talked about all this other stuff. I'm sorry, are you done with your...
That's it. That's the end of the pirate story.
Really? That's a good theory, though. I didn't mean to walk over there.
But... I feel like we gave it its due. Where are we going next?
Next, I want to tell you about a... this is kind of exciting. There is now a company that is making purpose-built police cars for the first time ever, which is... This astounds me, really.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, maybe because look at an ambulance is purpose-built.
Sure.
Fire truck is purpose-built.
Yeah.
Post office vehicles are purpose-built. Police have never had a purpose-built car ever before. They come from the factory as, you know, a Crown Victoria or a Chevy Impala. Mm-hmm. This company is now making a car that is built from the ground up as a police car.
Okay, what company? Well,
it's called Carbon Motors, and they're making a car called the, I think it's called the E7. And I don't know if that'll change in the future or not, but this is the idea, and they're taking orders for it right now. But it's pretty exciting. I mean, I don't have a whole lot to say about this. I mean, just check it out because it is interesting. It looks really cool. It's a neat car. It has a bit of a look like a Chrysler 300C, that type of look to it. Big sedan, but it's not quite there. It's not exactly that. But what makes it really cool is that they've thought about everything and the placement of everything. And of course, all the electronics, you know, all the equipment that police have to add to a vehicle,
right?
The laptops, the radio communication systems, the lights, all the software for all of that, that's all thought of well ahead of time and integrated perfectly into the car so that this thing operates, I wouldn't say flawlessly, but because I don't know. But it's purpose-built for the first time ever in history, and I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I want to check that out.
Yeah, it's called
Carbon Motors.
Carbon Motors, yeah, and they make the car called the E7. So take a look at it and see what you think, but they are taking orders, so if you want to pick one. No, you can't.
You'd have to be a police officer.
Correct.
So if we wanted to sum it up, it sounds like the improvements and modifications made to a police car that make it different from a civilian car could be classified as improvements in safety, improvements in performance, and improvements in reliability.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And electronics are so key in these cars that they have to be able to communicate back to the headquarters or with each other. Not only that, but just all of the extra equipment that we just mentioned. That's really, really crucial. And as far as getting the light operation correct and, you know, making sure that everything operates in the right sequence, that's important as well. So I would add electronics to that. That's also very important. But safety is probably the big one.
Yeah.
You want to keep them safe because they're doing a pretty dirty job for us. And, I think they deserve every right to be safe.
They deserve not to have a knife pushed through the seat.
Exactly. I mean, and it's terrible you have to even think about something like that, but you do.
And it's probably good that there is finally a company that is thinking that through from the get-go.
Yeah, that's right. It's very important, and I think it's a great car, so check it out.
Well, I don't know, Scott. You think we gave Ben in New Zealand an okay answer?
I think so, yeah. I mean, he's still going to have to look into the specifics of each car, but I think he'll be happy with this one.
Awesome. Well, hopefully we've made that interesting episode for a few listeners out there.
I was interested.
I thought, you know what? I am actually going to go look up Carbon Motors. I want to write that down and check it out. But I have another listener who has a suggestion for us, and I thought it might be time for
listener mail.
Yes. Spot on. Spot on as always, Scott. So Nathan, who did not say where he's from, but Nathan wrote us, and he says, you'll remember earlier, Scott, we were talking about different colors of tires.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and he wrote in, and he said that different colors in rubber change the rubber compound very slightly, but make a huge difference in wear over time. And he says he has learned this from working with bicycles because there's colors and tires and grips and brake pads, and that's why you start to see the difference.
Okay, that makes sense. I've seen bicycles with red tires or yellow tires and even white tires. I guess our question was why, you know, we were asking why don't they make custom tires like that? I guess it comes down to wear then, right?
Yeah, Nathan says for instance, black is really is the best for tires because it's always the hardest. And you might see grips and stuff with a light red color or salmon color or yellow, and that's a softer rubber compound.
Okay, that makes sense. Perfect sense. I mean, you'd have to look into the chemical compound, why that is, but interesting. Very good. Good point. So I'm glad he wrote us.
Yeah, thanks for writing in, Nathan. And I guess to all our listeners out there, thanks again for spending a little bit of time with us. If you have a suggestion for a topic that we should cover in an upcoming episode, please send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.